Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham's flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It is Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Skip Jack, and today is a somber day for your favorite Spurs podcast because we have lost one of the legends of not just Tottenham Hotspur, but the Wheeler Dealer Radio podcast. We have the whole crew here to talk about it today. I'm going to just get things kicked off. Ben, the love of your life has left Tottenham Hotspur. How are you feeling without Tom Carroll wearing Spurs kit for the rest of his career?
I'm not actually sure why I'm on this podcast anymore now that I'm a Swansea fan.
Come on, you so, Welsh. I don't even know what
Swans, maybe?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, they're the Swans.
Same hashtag, just COYS.
It's like you're still with us.
Yeah, I don't really have much of an adjustment here. Yeah, I still wear white on match days.
Are you gonna carry your knit doll around? Are you gonna put another badge on it, or does it look kind of like a swan if you just squint?
Yeah, swan and chicken. You know, basically we're the same team.
It's still Tom in a white shirt with a bird on his chest.
That's right,
Michael. How are you, Michael Cayley? How are you coping with this radical change in to both our favorite soccer team, our podcast, and just our lives in general?
Yeah, I mean it's tough for me. I've always been a fan. I just worry about the Malaysian 11, and
now that he's been set loose,
knowing that he could at any moment come to Malaysia again,
when they're relegated to the Malaysian First Division, when Swansea gets knocked down this year. Do you have anything from maybe the Gospels or another religious text that could help us through this trying time?
Jesus did recommend drinking heavily when a soccer player that you like a lot gets transferred. So I think that's in Mark. So
Mark was a Chelsea fan, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And finally, Brian, how are you handling this just massive blow to our podcast?
I'm great. I always hated Tom Carroll.
Hey, get your own bit. You hate Ryan Mason. I hate Tom Carroll. That's how it works.
Oh, I get him confused. I guess. I mean, understandably.
Would have been way better if I'd come up with it, but the symbol of Mark is the lion.
I thought it was. That's the joke. I got that much out of my Catholic education.
There we go.
Good times, good times. Well, one last thing. I don't want to get off Tom Carroll. Ben, as the internet's foremost Tom Carroll enthusiast, what was your favorite moment of Tom Carroll in a Spurs shirt? Was it
favorite
the time you took
moment.
A picture with us?
Yeah, at the time that I made him sign the center of my jersey, and he told me that was where the big players were supposed to sign, and I said, Tom, there's no one bigger.
No, that's you right there, Tom. I remember you saying it. I remember you spraying it out.
Yeah, he was so uncomfortable with that whole experience.
At least we took a super awkward photo that will live on forever in cartilage free captain lore. Dustin, I'm angry you haven't retweeted that photo yet.
You know, I can't blame him. He was a little starstruck to meet the author of Sex, Drugs, and Through Balls.
I'm so mad that both I did not get that signed by Tom Carroll and other people did not get that signed by Tom Carroll.
Alas.
Alas. We'll have to go to Wales and make it happen. So,
Tom Carroll was great, and now that he finally has his chance to shine, you know, I think he will be really good for Barcelona in a couple of years. And we'll all have to say, you remember when and what could have been.
You mean on FIFA or?
No, I mean in El Clasico when Tom Carroll is going up against Luka Modric. And it's like, when you left, I was but the learner. And now I am the master. Like, we're going to see that.
On Football Manager.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's not really that good in Football Manager. Oh.
Terrible game.
Completely unlike real life. Just what are we even doing? Tottenham Hotspur was able to move past the loss of this legend this week when we played West Bromwich Albion and we whipped the shit out of them. Brian, was this? I feel like we've said this a lot recently, which probably says a lot about how Spurs are playing. Was this Spurs' best performance of the year? I mean, we say it a lot, but every week these days, I feel like it's a question worth asking. Because it was really,
what did I,
really
did I say?
Good.
What did I say last week? I said last week that I didn't think the Chelsea performance was the best one. Which one did I say was the best? I don't remember.
Whichever one had Heung-min Son tied up on the bench.
You had to go there, huh?
I did.
It's a little early for that kind of talk.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we Tom have to wait left us. We're all to the mailbag, usually.
You probably said
stole my first beer.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it was really impressive. I think, you know, four goals against a West Brom team that is not bad. They're eighth. It's a Tony Pulis side that is usually very organized. They're generally hard to break down. Spurs tend to struggle with teams that sit in a low block. So in terms of what we were able to accomplish, it was great. It was really impressive. I can't think of many better halves of football than that first half that we played. And the rest of the game was kind of more of the same. I mean, West Brom did manage one attack in the second half, I think. I think this is probably one of the better performances.
I mean, this was... Ben, when you look at how complete the attacking was here, I think this is sort of what we were hoping to see out of Spurs this year. It feels like, I mean, maybe I'm just overreacting to the sort of tactical evolution we've seen in the last few matches with us deploying a back three. And, you know, who knows, maybe it's not going to work as well now that Vertonghen's going to be out for 2 months. But it feels like we're starting to take a next step from last year, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this on the last podcast, but, I mean, lately we have just been whipping the shit out of teams. Besides Chelsea, we've scored four goals in our last four matches, or three of our last four matches. We're killing mediocre teams. And that's a Spurs that we really, really rarely see. So especially against a side like West Brom, that I think we've drawn the past 47 matches we've played them against. Michael, you can check those numbers, but I think it's 47 straight 1-1 draws.
That is true.
To instead come away with a 4-0 victory that arguably could have been like 9-0 if we were a little more clinical. You know, I mean, we're obviously in great form. This is six straight victories. You know, we have Man City next, who look super vulnerable. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but, you know, that record Chelsea was chasing a minute ago, you know. It's only eight more wins to go.
Way to go, Ben. I think what you said, Ben, is well put, because Ben Foster, I think, was the man of the match for West Brom, and we put four past him. I mean, God knows what it would have been like if he had a bad day at the office.
Just to put some stats on West Brom, their road games this year, this was the first time that they'd allowed more than two goals. They'd only allowed two goals once at Anfield. They'd usually concede zero or one clear scoring chances. They conceded four. They usually concede like, 10 to 15 shots. They conceded 21. They usually get a few off. They only got three. I mean, this was completely dominant, and in a way that West Brom, people talk about, oh, West Brom were so bad, but like West Brom are usually good. This was Spurs destroying a perfectly capable defensive team.
So, what was so different about this match and our previous match? Because one thing that I think that 1-1 draw we had against West Brom was so frustrating that a lot of people forget that we were really taking it to them in the first half of that game, and it was kind of crazy that we didn't find the net. I mean, is it just as simple as we had Harry Kane back, we had a couple of our key midfielders back, we've kind of gotten into a groove now? Does it have something to do with the formation change? I mean, is it just as simple as we were playing at home and feeling our oats? Like, what was so different about these two matches?
I mean, I think that we had this debate after the West Brom game last time, and the Spurs' control of that game was mostly the kind of control that West Brom is okay with teams having. It was not the kind of penetrating passes into the 18-yard box over and over again control that we had here. It's a lot of little things, like, you know, having Kane and Alderweireld is huge. Having a midfield setup that allows us to press the ball is huge. Having a setup that engages our wingbacks as attacking players more directly is huge. Having everyone seem to be in form right now, all of those things play together, I think.
I pulled up our lineup real quick from the last match, and it's strange looking. We started Davis instead of Rose, presumably for rotation or injury purposes. Sissoko started. Lamella existed in that match, and we had Jansen up top. So that was our 4-1-4-1 days, which were not super effective. I think some credit goes to that tactical adjustment that's seen us kind of bring out the best in everybody, and it also helps to not play Musa Sissoko ever.
Of course. I think we can't talk about this game without talking about Harry Kane. I mean, he was on fire on the weekend, just scoring three really good goals. I mean, Ben, what was your favorite goal of the bunch? Because they were all pretty great.
It's hard to say. I mean, the finish that Harry put on for his second, the cross from Walker after he picked the ball off of Gareth McCauley, was a nice little acrobatic move in the vein of, you know, Zlatan, which is nice to see from Kane. But that chip from Dele Alli for Kane's third was just wonderful.
Well, the shot Kane put on is almost as good as the assist.
Yeah, I mean, he still had work to do to get on the end of that and finish it like he did. I mean, the first goal was also really nice. I mean, it was a through ball from Wanyama to Eriksen and then a through ball from Eriksen to Kane. It was just like the kinds of attacks and passes that we don't, you know, do as often as we should. Just freeing Kane up behind the back line, you know, it was just a really nice goal, a nice team move.
Well, so that's another player worth discussing, actually. I thought this is one of Victor Wanyama's better games in a Spurs shirt. Brian, is this, do we think he's playing appreciably differently? Is it that just a product of playing a team like West Brom? It's a little more defensive. Do you think he's getting more comfortable in the system? Because I thought he was doing a much better job at being progressive than we've seen him in a Spurs shirt. Like, he was making nice passes admittedly we're grading on a curve here, but, you know, he played really well for a guy who I think we all agree is best used in a more limited role this year. I mean, what do you think that we're seeing out of Wanyama right now? Is this a one game aberration, or do you think he's sort of fitting into the team a little bit better these days?
I'm gonna lean more towards aberration, but like with the caveat that Wanyama isn't awful in terms of like getting involved in the attack. I mean, we saw early this year, you know, him being unable to complete, you know, a 5-yard pass. And I still think that he has that element of his game to him where he is very comfortable playing a short, simple passing game. And if you're asking him to be progressive or sort of make any sort of through ball passes or to be an outlet in the attack, if you're going to depend on that, it's really not going to work out well. But this was just a game where he played well. You know, he did both his defensive responsibilities and his offensive responsibilities. We didn't have a lot of the ball, or West Brom didn't have a lot of the ball, so he was freed up to take up more advanced positions and get involved in the attack. You know, in games where we play against teams that are better and that are able to get on the ball more, then he has to fly around and do a lot more tackling. So it was nice to see that he has a little bit more to his game, but I mean, I think it's much more aberration than it is like trend.
I don't know. I think we've had this kind of conversation about Wanyama the last few weeks, and I think the tactical shift has really played to his strengths. You know, this is the first time we've seen him actually be an actual asset to our attack. But you know, he seems to be playing like week in, week out. I find myself hating him a little bit less, and just being really pleased with what he brings to the team. And, you know, against Chelsea, that was a very limited destroyer role, but you know, the sign that he can be comfortable being a little more progressive and a little more attack minded in a game like this, is incredibly useful. And, you know, I'm excited to see if that can develop into a trend, because right now it looks like he's really at home in this new tactical setup.
So let's talk a little bit about the new tactical setup. This is the third or fourth game in a row we've seen us use this back three. I think we're all very excited about it, and it's very sexy, and we've seen us use it to beat not only good teams that are a little more progressive, but bad teams or more defensive teams, however, well, both, honestly. It's been really useful, but on Saturday, Jan Vertonghen went down, and he's probably out for 2 months at least.
Jan
Vertonghen. He's out for at least 2 months. So, Michael, I mean, are we going to see Spurs continue to use this sort of three at the back system? Can we replicate without Vertonghen? Are we going to be able to replicate that between either Wimmer or Davies?
I think we're going to try. We'll see, but I have trouble believing that we're going to not keep trying. It creates a bunch of there's a bunch of different problems it creates. One of the big things that this back three makes this back three work, especially against a team like West Brom, where we need to get numbers forward and wasting. We saw against Aston Villa that if we have center backs that don't get forward, we just don't have the numbers to attack even a pretty bad team. And so both Dyer against Chelsea, there was a moment where he was pressing David Luiz, and Jan Vertonghen has been making like sort of inside wing back runs a lot from center back. So we need people who can get forward in both of – it's a little bit less true against Man City. Against Man City, we're not going to be asking them to push as far forward. But we're going to need players who can push forward. And like Kevin Wimmer doesn't really do that. Ben Davis is – he does that because he's a fullback, but his performance at the Euros was doubtful, and his general performance level for Spurs has not been that good. You know, maybe we could put Wimmer in the center. We could put Dyer in the center or Wimmer in the center and play two right-sided center backs. I'm not sure. It creates some problems. I think that this is something – these are tweaks that hopefully Poche's going to be able to work on.
So if you're Pochettino and you're going to do the three at the back system, would you – try to have play like we did against Chelsea and like we did against West Brom, where and have either Wimmer or Davies push up and Toby hang back? Or would you try and switch it and have whoever you're substituting in for Vertonghen hang back and have Toby be the progressive center back?
I think against City, I'd just do a straight swap with Wimmer, because we're not going to need to push as many numbers forward. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fine to have Dyer be the one center back who really rampages, with Wimmer doing more movement than a normal center back, but not a lot. It'll be more complicated, I think, against teams are less likely to just be coming at us the whole day.
One of the other things that Vertonghen was so good at in this match that is kind of essential when we play bad teams, when we're talking about getting those wide center backs involved in the attack, is the way, you know, our press works is fairly normal in this setup. But with the wide center backs, we had Jan and Dyer setting up kind of inside the opposition half, like right at the edge of the halfway line. And they were both able to kind of clean up any desperate attempts to break through our first line of the press. And that allowed us to just keep the pressure on constantly. Like, there was no release, because anytime they tried to clear the ball out of the back, Vertonghen or Dyer and Wanyama were like a three-man second line at the halfway line. And that, you know, to get away with that from a center back is you need to have some level of mobility that, you know, I don't feel comfortable having Wimmer set up that high up the pitch and then be able to recover if need be. You know, Davis being a fullback, even though he's not obviously an athlete like Rose and Walker, you know, he's still more mobile than Kevin Wimmer. I trust him more getting up and down the pitch in that respect. I think that was a really, really valuable asset in a game like this. And, you know, like Michael said, it's probably going to be less of an issue against Man City. But going forward, I'm on Team Ben Davis for this job. I don't think he was as suspect as you're suggesting in the Euros. I thought he was rather good for Wales as a wide center back. I don't know if I'm misremembering here or what, but I felt pleased. And it seems like this system could potentially give him a new lease on life, since he's clearly not going to be good enough to be a wing back in this system. I don't know. Maybe this is just my predilection for making people play positions that they're not supposed to be playing.
Ben, do you think it is to our advantage or our disadvantage that we're going to have to adjust the system against City, as opposed to if we were playing, I don't know, like Bournemouth?
I mean, it's obviously to our disadvantage because Man City are a better team.
Okay.
You know, you never want to have to play not your first choice where you can avoid
okay,
it.
Okay, yes. Well, putting that aside, does it help us to have a little bit more of a progressive team, for lack of a better chance, so we don't have to worry so much about who's rampaging forward in this game? Or
I mean,
is that not enough?
You know, it makes Wimmer's job a lot simpler, you know, because all he has to do is play defense like a center back. So yeah, in that respect, that's fine. Against a worse team, there would be more questions of, are we going to have a stagnant Aston Villa-esque performance from our back three that, you know, has knock-on effects to our whole attack? Yeah, that's going to be that to me is a much bigger concern going forward than, is our defense going to still be robust and strong? Because, you know, we saw Wimmer come in capably as a deputy for Vertonghen last year, and it was not a problem.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about this a little bit last week, but I do want to revisit it. I mean, Brian, is Lamella the kind of player who helps this system? Is he going to be a weird fit given how sort of compact it is? I mean, are you concerned about him coming back, or are we just going to have to play him in the center a little bit more?
I mean, yeah, I think he's going to play in that the space is kind of occupied by either Christian Eriksen or Dele Alli. I think he fits into either or both of those roles. I mean, you know, you're playing him at the expense of one of those guys. There's no, you know, we have to go back to the 4-2-3-1 if you want to get him in with both of those guys in the same lineup. But, you know, I think he fits
Just to disagree with you real quick, you know, I think we always talk about how irreplaceable Moussa Dembele is, but we've seen Christian Eriksen play that deeper position in this setup really, really well. And so I think there's definitely a case that we can play a Wanyama Eriksen midfield with Ali and Lamella ahead of them, especially against bad teams.
Well,
okay. One of the things I like so much about this setup is it makes us way less dependent on Moussa Dembele. I think we still need Moussa Dembele to be our best. We still need Moussa Dembele to beat the best teams. But we can drop Moussa Dembele and not lose nearly as much in terms of control playing the back three system.
That's kind of crazy, isn't it? I feel like we're so used to – I don't know. I feel like we're so used to being completely reliant on that guy. It's hard to imagine a Spurs where he's just not the key player, like, all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying he's not key. I don't think there's any way we beat Chelsea without him. I would not want to go into the City game without him. But
I don't know. Eriksen whipped their ass last time.
Yeah, that was a weird game.
I just remembered today, like, I don't know how I'd forgotten about it, but I forgot how exciting that game away to City was last year. It was just, like, I don't think I've been more excited about a goal than I was for Eriksen's winner in a long time. That was really very cool. Hopefully we have a much more comfortable win this week. I'll take any win, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, again, it's good to have options. Eric Lamela coming back is a good thing. It means that we don't have to worry about Sissoko playing football, or is Heung-min Son going to be good Heung-min Son, or is he going to be the disappearing act that we've seen a lot from him? So be excited about that if he ever proves that he exists again.
So let's talk about Spurs options. We're heading into the transfer window. Fans of every team, I think, insist that their team buys people during the window, and even when they probably don't need to or aren't able to. Spurs, I think the only rational transfer or rumor coming in that I've seen thus far is Font from Southampton. It looks like the Independent reported today, which is Wednesday for those of you playing at home, that he has been linked with Spurs. He's already demanded a transfer from Southampton. That we do know is true. Michael, is that you are the one who brought this to our attention? Is this something Spurs should be pursuing?
Short answer, yes.
I'll bet you have a longer one.
The longer answer is that Spurs have been – I've been skeptical of whether Spurs needed to make any moves because basically – basically, if Spurs are going to have their best possible season, it's because all of our players play well. If Spurs are going to, you know, there's very, very little you can do in January to ensure that you're going to have your, like, 90th percentile season. You have your 90th percentile season because your really good players all stay healthy and play well. You can't buy players at this level in January. You can't expect to. What January buying is for is for managing your downside. Say somebody gets hurt, say a couple of things go wrong, a player gets out of form or something, you want to do something to your system, you've got a little bit more wiggle room to get through. And where Spurs were a month ago, or 2 months ago, but where Spurs were before we started this crazy winning streak, the downside wasn't something you need to worry about. Because the downside was instead of finishing fifth, we finished sixth or seventh. That's not a big deal. Now the downside is maybe finishing fourth versus finishing fifth, which is a huge deal. Now the downside is, you know, winning that one extra tie in Europa that gets us into the semis or the finals. And so now I think Spurs are in a situation where they should be looking at overspending a little bit in January to get depth. And the place that we need depth right now, especially if we're going to keep playing this back three, which I think we should, is in the back line. Jose Font has played with Marcio Pochettino. I don't know if the Font thing, who knows? It makes sense. It's the sort of thing we should be looking at.
So, Ben, does he fit? I mean, is he – what do you think of him fitting into Spurs right now, especially with us playing a back three or us switching to another system that might not, you know – it might just use two center backs. I mean,
so the thing about Font is, like Michael said, he's played for Pochettino. So that adjustment to the high press and, you know, the tactical nuances of how Pochettino wants to roll out his team, you know, that's going to be a very, very easy transition. So that's good. The one weird downside is that Font is right footed. And as we all know, Mauricio Pochettino insists on playing left-footed center backs on the left and right-footed center backs on the right. And with Dyer and Toby, we already have, you know, two right-sided center backs. You know, in an ideal world, we would have a left-footed center back who could fill that role. But that said, when Toby and Font played together at Southampton, Font played on the left. And I think Font plays on the left now and Van Dijk plays on the right. So you know, aside from Pochettino's, you know, weird hangups about footedness, we know that not only can Font play on the left side of a defense, but he can play on the left side of Toby Alderweireld. So, you know, if Poch is going to break his rule, this seems like a guy that he might be comfortable doing it for. I think, like Michael said, the reasons to sign a center back are there. It's just Pochettino's weird, and maybe Font isn't the guy because Pochettino's weird.
But this would give us the ability to rest Toby, right? I mean, then we can sit him in some of these Europa League matches, or if we start playing real opponents in the FA Cup, we don't have to worry about Cameron Carter-Vickers or whoever. I mean, this gives us valuable flexibility.
Right. At the very least, you know, when you're playing three center backs and we're going to start having two games a week again, having more bodies who can play in that position is very good. You know, having to play a back line of Cameron Carter-Vickers, Kevin Vimmer, and Ben Davis is not like the most inspiring thing in the world. So adding, you know, the level veteran head of Jose Font, who knows Pochettino, makes a lot of sense for depth purposes.
And right now we have four players for five spots with a whole bunch of 180-minute weeks coming up. With Vertonghen out, we've only got with Davis as our one backup center back and our only backup left wing back. That's again five guys for four spots in the back three system. So depth right now is also not right now. Right now, the next 2-3 weeks we have. It's light, and then it gets heavy very fast.
Yeah, and don't forget,
getting something done by the it doesn't need to happen right away, but getting something done by the end of the window would be quite useful.
Yeah, and don't forget the FA Cup. I mean, there aren't a lot of Premier League teams against Premier League teams in this round. So, I mean, we're playing Wickham this round, but it's probably going to get a lot harder, more than likely, very quickly. So,
God, I would not take that game seriously. God, I hope we don't take that game seriously.
Yep.
So also in terms of depth, it was reported that Kyle Walker-Peters has made the jump to training with the senior squad. And he is a right-sided fullback, right wing back, but he has played on the left, you know, a decent amount. And so it's entirely possible that, you know, he'll get a little.
Fast-tracked to the team. They might throw him a bone in the second half against Wickham if we're pasting them. But like, I mean, Harry Winks got promoted to the senior team last year and he barely played. I'd be shy, short of an injury crisis or just playing another League Two, League One team in the FA Cup. I'll just be
kind of the thing.
I mean, we're also playing Genk? We're playing Genk. In the Europa League, so maybe he'll get some minutes there if we keep playing some Mickey Mouse teams in the Europa League. But
I mean, the point is we have this game against Wickham coming up, which is a bit of a Mickey Mouse game. You know, I don't want to say we're in an injury crisis because we lost Vertonghen, but it does cause problems when if Ben Davis is going to be our backup left center back and our backup left wing back, there's obviously room for another body that, you know, Kyle Walker-Peters makes some sense to test out there. So I wouldn't be shocked if we see him in that lineup, or at least as a sub.
We'll see him as a sub, maybe, but not. I'll be shocked if he gets real minutes, non-injury minutes.
I would love to see him take Trippier's minutes, but right now those in the rotation we've got right now, those minutes need to go to Trippier. But yeah. I would love to see him be better than Trippier because Trippier is terrible.
Maybe next year, but even if he is better than Trippier at this particular moment, I think we all know enough about Pochettino that he's not going to.
All right, I'll bet we see him against Wickham.
Yeah, we'll see him against Wickham in like the last after the 70th minute. I mean, we're not going to see him, you know, if we're winning comfortably.
Yeah, Pochettino is totally happy dumping a player for a youth teamer. That is not something that Pochettino won't do if he thinks the youth teamer is better.
But we haven't seen him just throw a youth teamer into the first team as quickly as he would be doing with Kyle Walker-Peters. I mean, he took a while to work.
Well,
isn't in the team. Winks is only starting to get regular minutes.
That's not true. We played Gillingham, and he's played Marcus Edwards and Anton Walks and guys who have had like no minutes with the senior team because it was a bullshit game against a shitty side. So
I guess I just don't count the League Cup in my head, but that's my problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But like this counts arguably just as little as that match. I mean, it's just as much a garbage team that we're facing, and we potentially have a hole at left wing back if Ben Davis is having to play center back. So.
Well, I'd love to prove it wrong. I would love to watch him play. And if there's any team to throw him in against, it's against the League Two side. So,
and we have very few. We have not had an issue where we've just our players have been super shitty. Like this is a distinct issue. It's not just about getting minutes for Winks means resting very good players. Getting minutes for Kyle Walker-Peter just means accepting that Kieran Trippier is not the solution to any problem that Tottenham Hotspur have.
Well, how do we get a tattoo with a diamond and wings across our chest? He is a solution to that problem. Brian, how do you feel about our depth at this particular moment? It felt like we were, because I think for a few games there, it was everybody but Lamella was fit, and now. I guess for Tongan feels like a particularly big hole in our depth.
I don't know. I mean, we were in the same position at about the same time last year. And then Vimmer came in and played, I don't know, whatever it was, 13 or 14 straight Premier League games, and he was fine. And we got to the point where people were talking about, oh, well, maybe Jan Vertonghen doesn't even get a spot back because Kevin Vimmer's been so good.
I mean, that's worth considering. We worry about Vimmer's mobility and all that. Like, he might be fine. He was perfectly fine last year.
And I mean, the thing is, like, and I didn't go back and look at Vimmer's performances early in the season, but it seems to me that Vimmer was good last year when he played beside Toby Alderweireld, and he was bad this year when he did not play beside Toby Alderweireld, when he played with Dyer or with Cameron Carter-Vickers.
Michael Dawson-itis.
Yeah, so I would suggest that the continued health of Toby Alderweireld, knock on wood, would indicate that Vimmer will probably be fine. While I am concerned about depth, and Jan is turning 30 this spring, and he's had a year where he's had three fairly significant injuries. He did his ankle last January, did his knee over the summer, ankle again now. So I think we're going to need a center back at some point. I don't think we need to be going out and overspending on depth for the sake of depth. The only reason I can think of why we would need to is if, like Michael said, we're in that kind of fine margin where we think, this is the signing that keeps us in title contention or pushes us into the semifinal, the Europa League, or the final, that sort of fine margin, I guess. But I think we're fine, largely speaking.
So let's talk about our departures. We all mourn Tom Carroll at the beginning of the show, but I don't know. Does anyone have any actual thoughts on Tom Carroll leaving Spurs? I mean, Ben, you are our foremost Tom Carroll-ologist. I mean, Carroll, there's been a lot written this week about how Carroll's the last of the loaned players, how he's, he's the last guy.
Right, that Townsend-Mason generation.
Yeah, the generation before the guys who actually contributed to the team.
Well, not including Harry Kane, who's very good.
Yeah, I guess Kane does belong to that generation. I mean, what do you think of Carroll? Because Carroll was a guy who's, to me, I was always sort of annoyed with the way people talked about Carroll because everyone was acting like he was a great player, just waiting to happen. Why aren't we starting him? And, there's certainly lots of discussion to be had about he should have been getting minutes with Spurs a long time ago, and it probably had a detrimental effect on his career that he didn't. But at the same time, this was a guy who was massively hyped by certain sections of the Spurs fan base, mostly you, Ben. And he never really did anything for Spurs for one reason or another. I mean, so what are your thoughts as he sort of leaves the team, never having realized that potential?
So my post-mortem on Tom Carroll is that he was and remains very, very technically gifted. I think the things that he does well, you know, at the time people were hyping him up, myself included, were things that we were sorely lacking in midfield in the absence of Luka Modric. You know, he is good at passing the ball. He reads the game very well. He is very heads up player. He's smart. He knows where the ball is going to go before he gets it. You know, there are things that he can bring to a team, and a team like Swansea, especially if they want to go back to their old, you know, Swansea ball of Barcelona light tiki taka possession, you know, he has a really good fit for that style of play. You know, I think in terms of his development, the biggest thing that hindered him is that just physically, he never seemed to turn into an adult. You know, Harry Winks between last year and this year seemed to hit puberty and stop looking like a small child and looking like a guy who could play football in the Premier League. Tom Carroll never really made that physical jump. And I think, as you mentioned, not getting minutes earlier in his career, I think made it really hard for him to adapt to, you know, his physical limitations against the physicality of the league in a way that would make him a more useful player. That, you know, Winks going through that process at 19, 20, while also putting on some muscle mass, you know, has been an easier transition for him. So, you know, I think there's a universe where Tom Carroll isn't on loan to QPR that season. And when Tim Sherwood comes in, he gets his minutes and maybe, you know, turns into something worth a shit for Spurs.
Or AVB uses him the year before.
Yeah, right. There are opportunities for him to have a moment that just sort of passed him by. And now at 23, it's like, you know, they're never going to happen. He needs to go somewhere. He's going to get first team minutes if he's ever going to turn into a real footballer. You know, I wish him the best of luck. I hope it works out for him. I'm sad it didn't work out for him at Spurs, but you know, we've got Harry Winks, and who needs Tom Carroll now?
When did you sort of, a lot of our conversations, both public and private, about Tom Carroll over the years have been sort of drowned in hyperbole, but, I mean, when did you sort of, obviously I know when you got excited by him, but when did you sort of cotton to the fact that maybe it's not going to work out for Tom at Spurs? Like, I know for me, as much shit as I gave him, I always found him to be a fairly exciting player, but when he just didn't do much at Swansea, even though I know that wasn't a team set up to his strengths or any of that, that's when I just sort of, I kind of mentally wrote him off at that point, which probably wasn't fair to him. But I mean, when did you sort of realize it just wasn't going to happen for him at Spurs?
I mean, I finally accepted defeat when, you know, the season of Mason Bentaleb and Tom Carroll still couldn't get in the team. You know, it was just, that was his moment. And
his moment was probably under Sherwood. Moment, it was Sherwood. Sherwood was the guy who would have played him and had faith in him. And he was at QPR, yep, getting the shit kicked out of him in the championship.
Yep.
The thing about player development is that it's not linear. Like, and if a player is good for a 19-year-old, good for an 18-year-old, that's great. But just because you're good for an 18-year-old, good for a 19-year-old, doesn't mean you're going to turn out to be good for a 24-year-old. U18, U20 football is terrible. You have to get much, much better between the ages of 19 and 23 to become a good Premier League footballer. And so, like, when a prospect doesn't develop, that doesn't mean that prospect was bad. It means they didn't develop. And Tom Carroll strikes me as someone who is the same player now that he was at 19, and that's bad. You're supposed to become much better.
Now, how much of that – this is obviously impossible to say, but how much of that do you think was affected by the way he was loaned out? I mean, is this just – would this have happened regardless? Or do you think what Spurs were doing with our youth players at the time had anything to do with it?
I mean, that's the development that we're talking about, right? Like – you know, in order to make that jump from 19 to 23, you know, you need to have a place to develop. And that's not, you know, playing U21 games and training with a senior side isn't enough most of the time. you know. So maybe had something gone different for him at 19-20, you know, he could have made that jump. But, you know, the way that his development was handled, you know, it didn't. I don't know. I still think that Tom Carroll at 19 was good enough for the Premier League, and I think at 23 he will be also. He's certainly not good enough for Spurs. And
he's older than 23.
I think he's 23.
He's like 25 or something, 26. Like, he's old.
34. Yeah, he's 24 now.
Yeah.
He turned 24 in May. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I think the loan system is clearly suboptimal, and Premier League teams should have minor league teams, and just because England hates that doesn't mean it's not a better system. But it is, it's not, like, radically impossible. I mean, Walker and Rose and Kane all came through the loan system and are now excellent Premier League footballers. Like, you know, I think it's easy, it's easy to just blame it on the loan system. It's just how it happens in sport, in baseball, which has extremely rational minor league system development. Sometimes 18-year-olds just don't get better. Like, it's just a normal thing that happens.
Or look at Jose Bautista's career. Like, you're talking about development not being linear. I mean,
yep.
You know, there's a guy who everybody gave up on, and all of a sudden he's one of the best sluggers in baseball. It's very.
Yep.
Yeah. Hell, Jimmy Vardy had his best season at like 28.
Well, that's because he stopped drinking Skittles and vodka when he was almost 30 years old.
Yeah, well, you know, things happen.
Or started drinking Skittles.
So if Tom Carroll.
I think you look at Danny Rose, and like, I think that's a great example of a guy who, you know, he just, by virtue of the position that he played and the lack of alternatives, you know, he got to develop on the pitch for Spurs over the past 3-4 years. And there was a time very recently where, you know, we all thought he was shit and a total bust. And, you know, he managed to clear that hurdle and develop into a really good player. And had Tom Carroll gotten that same kind of playing time over those years, who knows?
Well, think about this. Think about this. All we know is it didn't happen. Spurs go hire DeBoer instead of Pochettino. And, you know, Danny Rose is scuffling in the championship right now, probably. I mean, you know, I mean, you talk about right place, right time. You know, if there's any player I am convinced owes his success to a single manager, I think it's Danny Rose. But yeah, I don't know. It's a shame to see Carroll go. Like, we had a lot of, maybe at this site more than others, we had a lot of hopes pinned on that kid. And, you know, I guess on the one level, it's weird to see him go. On another level, it's kind of weird that he's still here, or was still here. But yeah, you know, I don't know. Hopefully he keeps Swansea up. I don't like their chances. Brian, you think Swansea's going to stay up with big Tom Carroll coming in to save him?
No. I mean, there's just, they've made some signings, but I mean, you know, other than Tom Carroll, I don't know if any of them are good enough to keep them up by themselves.
They got Narsing, who could be very, very good. Martin,
that seems to be the popular opinion. I know nothing about him, though, so I can't say. I know about Tom Carroll, and Tom Carroll's amazing. So,
okay,
that's clearly a stats pick from Dan Altman. So that'll be interesting to.
Oh no,
see.
Oh no, the beef is extending into the podcast.
I know. I like Dan. Dan's
uh-huh.
great.
Uh huh. Okay.
Keep your analytics Twitter out of here.
Yeah. Keep your numbers beefs off this podcast, Michael.
I am not beefing with Dan. I like our kids go to the same daycare.
Uh huh.
Seriously.
Uh huh. Is it the most efficient daycare in Brooklyn? God. Last thing before we talk about, we get off transfer talk. Is there anyone, like I said, Spurs have not been linked to a ton of players. Like I said, Font is probably the only serious guy that I've seen us tied to. Brian, is there anyone within the realm of possibility that you would like to see Spurs go after and to either help us with depth or just, I don't know, for any other reason other than Font?
Font really doesn't excite me, to be quite honest. I have no interest in signing Jose Font.
You're not chomping at the bit to get that fourth center back?
No, and not a 33-year-old center back either.
I don't know. Is our backup to Toby? Like, if it means we can stop playing Dyer or Carter Vickers there this year, I'm kind of all for it.
I don't know. I mean, we pay the price and his age and whatever contract he would be given almost make him
prohibitive to sign.
Like, it depends on what the price is.
But again, if getting to use him means the difference between top four and not top four, or God forbid, second in the title, you know, that's money well spent.
Or winning the FA Cup or the Europa League, or not winning the one of those. Like,
and that's what Michael's talking about. Like, you know, managing your downside on the margins is, you know, if it makes a tangible difference between, you know, one level of success and another, you know, it's cheap at any price. Well, not at any price, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Font is not the kind of player that, you know, on the downside of his career, not even late peak anymore. I mean, he is now well past peak. So I don't know. I think any money spent on him would be too much, but
better than Ryan Nelson.
I mean, yeah, probably. Yeah, probably better than Ryan Nelson and Luis Saha. I think though that if you weren't going to buy another center back, like a loan for another striker would be perhaps a worthwhile option. I know we've kind of experimented with some other formations and playing different players as a striker, but you know, Vincent Janssen's just continued not clicking with this team.
Oh, speaking of, he was tied to Galatasaray today. Although, as Michael said when we were getting ready to record, the Turkish media just likes to make things up, so that's probably not real.
You know, so even if we keep him, it might be nice to have another healthy striker. Like, I mean, we've basically – last year we went through an entire season with one striker, Harry Kane. And this year we upgraded. Now we have two strikers.
We have one striker.
Yeah, but we still have one striker.
We might have two.
We're paying two people to do one job.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, a loan for a Luis Saha type player is like super ideal.
Just make it Luis Saha. Just sign him again, Levy.
Bring in Robbie Keane.
We can bring back Fraser Campbell, you know.
Robbie Keane.
Resurrect Dimitar Berbatov. Do it. Make it happen.
I mean, he's available on a free. That's all I'm saying.
Dude, we should definitely sign Berbatov.
If only to hear about, like, the fights he gets into with Pochettino on the training ground. Like, I'm all for it.
There's only 35. Be, like, one player out there that's available, like Loic Remy, or, you know, just some guy who we know is a Premier League, like, I don't know, Dwight Gale, or fucking...
Dwight Gale's got 20 goals this year. No one's selling him.
Or what's the guy's name that used to play for Palace and Bournemouth and...
Glenn Murray?
Yeah, Glenn Murray. I mean, Stephen Fletcher is probably still alive. And he's basically an older Scottish version of Harry Kane, so...
Guys, I have a great idea. What if we offer Sunderland £6 million for Jermaine Defoe?
I mean, seems like a drastic offer.
Yeah, I know. God damn it, Ben. All right. Guys, we've talked for a while. Let's get to some questions before it gets too late. First question comes from Aaron Miguel Santos. Ben, this one's for you. How far can Spurs go this year?
I mean, the treble is still on. I don't know why I can't say that word.
Uh-huh.
It should be treble.
You make fun of me. Fuck you.
I know.
The treble. You're going to get a bagel while you talk about the treble?
Yeah, the treble. The trouble with the trebles is...
Oh, God.
I thought you'd like that, you fucking nerd.
Fuck you.
Yeah, but we could win the treble.
Really?
And the treble.
Okay.
We could win a treble,
all
treble,
right,
double.
We're moving on. This is very silly. We're moving on.
I mean, I think thinking that we could win the treble is silly, but we could win the double.
The double? The double? We could win the double? Is that what you're saying, Michael? Your name's not even spelled right anyway, Michael. God.
People don't know that.
They do now. Michael, what did Dele Alli get Eric Dier for his birthday? And can it be cleaned with tap water?
Yeah, I mean, this is complicated. Like, I think they're young enough that like they're really about buying things, and Dyer clearly wants to look good. He had that haircut that he was going with, and he decided to scrap it, which I'm sad about. But I know other people didn't like it. But I think that I think Deli got him like a personalized shopping spree. They were gonna go together.
So they can both wear Doctor Who jackets and torn jeans at the same time.
Exactly. God, that Deli jacket. My God, I would kill for that jacket.
I think Deli's fashion choices are more dubious than you do, but that was a really good jacket.
Oh, they're fantastic.
That was a really good jacket. And the Doctor Who sunglasses with it, it was a very good look. He needs to stop tearing his jeans. That's not a good look, Deli. Just get some.
Deli is a fashion icon.
He is. Ben, in light of signing Tainio, I fucking don't know. He wasn't playing when I watched the team. Son, which former Spurs player's son would you like to see the club sign next, and why is it Dimitar Berbatov?
Yeah, I mean, no question. I would love to see Dimitar Berbatov and Dimitar Berbatov's son line up together for Spurs. I don't care how old the elder Berbatov is.
Cigarettes at like age 14 while he's like running, like not running drills.
Obviously.
Which of Berbatov's 20 illegitimate sons would you want us to sign?
Well, and do we know that we don't already have one of them on our books?
It could be Tainio's son, for all we know.
Yeah, it could be. In fact, it's more likely than not.
Oh, no.
Berbatov doesn't seem like someone very interested in birth control, does he? Dimitar birth control. There we go. That's the title of the podcast right there. I forgot. Reno Wallabout has reminded us of another terrible Spurs rumor that is almost surely not true. Brian, should Spurs try to lure Luke Shaw away from United, and what food should they put in the trap?
I mean, based on Luke Shaw from, you know, this preseason, any food will seem probably work. Why would we want Luke Shaw? What would we do with him?
I guess so Pochettino doesn't have to wonder who ate all the pies.
I mean, this is a very silly rumor because I believe it's predicated upon us selling Danny Rose to Manchester City, I guess, right? That's the only way that makes sense.
We're never selling Danny Rose, if only because every other player in the Premier League hates his breathing guts. So, and because I want it to be true that we will never sell Danny Rose. Please don't sell Danny Rose.
Are we actually linked with Luke Shaw?
Like in the way that Galatasaray is linked with, Vincent Janssen, we were linked.
So very credibly.
Yes. Ben. It is the most credible source, unlike CNN and their fake transfer rumors. It was formulated by college Republicans in Annapolis. It's all very great. Final question. Michael, we'll start with you. Pochettino locked. This is from Haley Bachrock. She wants to know. Pochettino locks Vimmer and Davies in a room together and tells them to settle who will step in for Jan. What are their methods and who wins?
That's a great question.
So
I think that, let's see, what are our. I don't have anything on Ben Davis.
He likes to read.
Ben Davis uses his misshapen forehead as a weapon and a shield.
I figure that Ben Davis keeps suggesting different things, like let's do a skills competition, or let's sort of debate the tactical responsibilities. Or let's see who can climb the highest, and Vimmer just keeps saying, "No, we fight every time. No, we fight," until eventually Vimmer just like shoves him and comes out the door and says, "I'm starting."
Really, you don't think Vimmer would engage? I feel like Vimmer would engage in some old-fashioned German bureaucracy. Like there'd just be forms in triplicate. He would grow like Bismarck's mustache while he's doing it.
Yeah, but he's Austrian, so.
Well, Poche comes in at game time, and they haven't even agreed on the bylaws yet.
Exactly. They're still figuring out who goes first, and it's all very complicated. Somehow Serbia is involved. It's just really confusing.
I mean, I think.
What was that?
I think you're. Oh, go ahead.
I'm not going to say it a third time.
We have standards with bits on Wheel of Dealer Radio. Ben, go ahead.
Well, I think you're overlooking the obvious, and that Kevin Vimmer will just button Ben Davis inside of his shirt all the way up over his head and leave him there in the dressing room.
You don't think he'll, like, be stuck in his shirt as he plays?
I mean,
the tallest center back.
Who's this new center back Spurs have, and why does it look like a left back on top of the shoulders of a center back?
No other Spurs teams incorporated the trench coat into their kit, but this is a new plan.
It is the surest way to ensure that not only do we have the world's tallest center back, but also a cabinet member of the Trump administration playing for Tottenham Hotspur. Brian, do you have any thoughts on this?
I'm sure that somehow it will involve a sheep, and that will mean that Davies wins.
Oh no. You don't think Vimmer distracts him with the sheep?
I think that Davies will convince Vimmer that the sheep is an integral part of the competition, and Kevin will just be, you know, because Davies is so scholarly and wise, Vimmer will have no choice but to participate.
All right, just so I'm sure, are we adding Welsh things to your bit, too?
I mean, you know, I'm comfortable with all nationalistic stereotypes.
Brian, you're like a five-tool player here. That's why we keep you around. It's just
as long as those tools are related solely to making gross overgeneralizations about people based on their nationality. Yes,
I think that's a new thing we need to start doing as Americans in this brave new world. So you've got a head start on all of us, which, you know, good for you, I guess, or not.
It's not bad for me so far.
Good point. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Ben, where can people find you on the internets?
You can find me on Twitter at Gary Rootbeer.
Gary Rootbeer? What do you tweet about at Gary Rootbeer?
Mostly Spurs. And some angry political takes.
There you go. Brian, where can people find you on the internets? As you mute your thing. Not answering, never tweeting. That's where you can find him. Good answer.
Never tweet, guys. Never tweet.
Good answer. Michael, where can people find you online?
Well, I don't have any Twitter accounts, but when I do, I tweet from Brett Rainbow.
And you will not be able to find me at Brett Rainbow because, unlike Brett Rainbow, I show up to the bar that has early morning soccer playing. I don't just decide to go home because it's cold outside. So, yeah, you know, I am reliable. So because I'm reliable, you will not find me at Brett Rainbow. So
that is a sick burn 60 minutes into a podcast.
Yeah, you know what? It's for the hardcores. It's for the Brett Rainbow Nation. That's who it's for.
The Brett Rainbow Connection.
The Brett Rainbow Connection. Exactly.
That's especially great because he's never going to hear this. So
he sometimes listens to us. I doubt he gets all the way to the end, though. Few do.
Well, we could title this one "The Brett Rainbow Connection."
The Brett Rainbow Connection, yes. Well, we got a lot of good titles for this one. Is it going to be the Dimitar Birth Control? Is it going to be?
You're the only one that likes that.
I like it. Well, it's a good thing I'm the only one editing and posting this podcast, then, isn't it, Brian?
Good. Fair enough. Yeah.
For Ben Daniels, for Michael Cayley, for Brian, and for Dimitar Birth Control, I am Skip Jack. Come on, you first.